hello again, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Caller podcast for the 14th day of August, 2019. And say that slowly so I wouldn't screw it up, because you never know. I always get talking faster than I think. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening. Thanks for pressing play, downloading the program, however you do it, streaming, whatever. It all matters. Every little bit matters. And thank you for continuing to share it. I love getting the emails. You know, I turned my kid onto it, or I turned my parents onto it. I turned anybody you turn onto it, man. Turn on, tune on, drop, whatever. I don't know. I'm not a hippie. Anyway, thank you for that and rating and reviewing on iTunes. Those numbers are going up too, and I appreciate that. I like to see the starred reviews, and I love to see the 5-star reviews, and I love to read them, and it's just really cool. It's really cool that a guy in a basement could build something like this. So thank you for that. I'm just still a guy with a microphone hooked up to an iPad who then airdrops it to a MacBook and cuts it all together, and then there you go. So thank you for that. I apologize to those of you, as I talk about, this show's usually up by 3 o'clock in the morning. It usually is, but it's only up by 3 o'clock in the morning on iTunes, I think. It's hopefully I can figure out a way to get the people at the website to edit it earlier than 10 o'clock. That doesn't always happen. It's happening less and less. But we'll always have iTunes. So we've got that going for us. And I'll try and figure out how to do the other ones. I'm going to try and ask for passwords. On a programming note, you've got to enter today or tomorrow by 10 a.m. for a chance to win the signed copy of Tipping Points by Liz Wheeler. That's it. A ton of you have already entered. And if you've bought the book, just send me a screen capture of your receipt. You know, if you bought it on Amazon or whatever, or a picture of you holding the book at home, not in a bookstore, because that would kind of be cheating. It'd be suspicious. Not that I don't believe you. It's just that I don't believe you. But just show me that you bought the book. I'll enter your name twice, and you get double the chance to win. And I'm seeing a whole lot of new emails in this contest. So I'm hoping Liz brought over a whole bunch of fans to listen to the show, and they've stuck around. So hopefully that'd be cool. Yeah, the rest of the programming notes you don't really need to know right now. They'll just be worked out as it happens. So, yeah, we got a lot of stuff to get to. The death of journalism, the slow, painful, agonizing death of journalism. It just needs to be put out of its own misery. We've got CNN. And this is not the week to be CNN. Not that it's ever a week to be CNN. But this week in particular is really bad for their anchors, talent, hosts, whatever the hell you want to call them, on air and off. Don Lemon's getting sued. Erin Burnett made a clown of herself. And Fredo is, well, being Fredo. We'll get to all that, plus the turmoil at the New York Times. We'll talk about Hong Kong a little bit. So much to get to. Oh, also, send me your questions. If you just have any random questions about any of the stories we've talked about, or just general policy things or thoughts about it, movie questions too. Email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. One of my cats is freaking out over in the corner, chasing nothing, it looks like. I hope it's nothing, but he ate it, so either way. There are 2 stray cats in my backyard, and I've been feeding one of them, and now a second one has showed up. I'm trying to catch the little bastard. He looks small and was skinny. I've fattened him up, given him food all the time, but I don't want to touch him because we have cats. And the so-called people who are very concerned about pets and we want to help rescue this, that, and the other thing, they've been really unhelpful in this. All the people who say that it's, you know, their passion aren't very passionate. It's kind of pissing me off. So I might just shove the little bastard into a box and take him to the vet. So if he's clean, we'll bring him in the house and try to get him adopted, but I can't bring him around our cats. Anyway, you don't need to know that. Like I said, lots and lots going on in the world. But first, I want to tell you about lots and lots of stuff going on inside of you, and you've got to get it out. You dragon. Stop dragging. Let me tell you about Life Change Tea. It's a game changer. Since I've been drinking Life Change Tea, I've noticed that I'm feeling a lot better, got a lot more energy. I wake up better. I have so much more energy. How does it work? Well, Life Change Tea is a delicious proprietary herbal formula. It's a gentle daily cleanse. is designed to rid your body of harmful intruders. Do the math. Let's face it, our food was different a long time ago, not even really all that long ago, maybe within your lifetime. It was minimally processed, not loaded in pesticides. It was nourishing and healthy for your body. Today, not so much. GMOs, pesticides, herbicides, and heavy processing, they deplete the nutrition in our food. It's no wonder you feel so run down. You got all this stuff inside of you, and it's stopping the limited nutrients that are in our food from being absorbed. Well, I urge you to try it for yourself. Go to GetTheTea.com now. GetTheTea.com. Get ready for more energy. I drink it every day. I got a gallon of it sitting in the fridge. Drink a cup a day. Follow the instructions. Follow the instructions. Life Change Tea is not available in stores. Go to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Try it out for yourself, and as an added bonus just for you, enter the promo code Derek, my name, which is convenient and easy to remember, at checkout, D-E-R-E-K. I don't know if it has to be capital D or not. If it doesn't work one way, it'll work the other way. And you get free shipping. You can't beat it, sent right to your door. Give it a shot. You will like it. You will notice the difference, and you'll be cleaned out. And that's really what it's all about. Get that stuff out of you so you can get the good stuff into you. All right, let's see. Let's start. Where should we start? We got the turmoil at the New York Times. We've got the turmoil at CNN. Let's do a CNN story. Then we'll go to the New York Times. Then we'll go back to CNN because they are, I swear to God, if they were not part of a massive conglomerate, if they were required to really be profitable in the traditional sense, they're profitable, and I'll explain why. I have before, but I think it's worth repeating. But like really growth, if ratings mattered, like just about any other channel out there, if you put a show on Home and Garden, which blows CNN's doors off in ratings. If you put a show on Home and Garden and it just, there's suddenly this crater in ratings on that show, you're probably not going to get renewed. You're probably going to get a weird talking to. They might not even air all the episodes that they've recorded because, well, you're not bringing in enough eyeballs. In cable news, it's different. In cable news, it's very different. I'll explain in a second, but the problems at CNN are both on air and off. Yesterday, I told you about Fredo, and we've got a Fredo update that will come later. But first, it's Don Lemon's time. The dumbest person in primetime. Well, the dumbest people in primetime. It's tough to say. I tried to watch some of Don Lemon's show today last night to see if he would address it in his program. He didn't, shockingly. Mediaite broke the story. Man sues CNN's Don Lemon for alleged assault at Sag Harbor bar. What? Assault? Did he punch the man? Did he beat him? Did Don Lemon slap him across the face? What, pray tell, happened? Well, they left an important word out of the headline. I'll read the story to you a little bit, shall we? A man claimed in a new lawsuit that CNN host Don Lemon attacked him at a Sag Harbor bar last summer. The lawsuit, obtained by Mediaite, was filed Sunday and seeks unspecified damages for emotional pain and suffering. Now, I'm not normally sympathetic to these kinds of lawsuits, and if something happens to you, you should call the police right away. You should get people involved right away. But we're dealing with people who told us that we must believe all sexual assault victims under any circumstances. Really only, they meant only when they're accusing Republicans, but they got a few Democrats caught up in there. Actually, more Democrats were in trouble because there are a lot of Democratic perverts. You got John Conyers, you got Al Franken, Harvey Weinstein, on down the list. Kevin Spacey, although he's kind of been cleared, he's still never going to work again. Not in big productions, anyway. The quote, this is from a CNN spokesperson. I love that. It's a CNN spokesperson. What can we get rid of? Person. What if they don't identify as a person? Shouldn't it be a CNN spokesbiped? But what if they only have one leg or no legs? Or what if they identify as a quadruped animal? We should just say CNN said. Quote, the plaintiff in the lawsuit has previously displayed a pattern of contempt for CNN on his social media account, a CNN spokesperson told Mediaite in a statement. That claim follows his unsuccessful threats and demands for an exorbitant amount of money from Don Lemon. Don categorically denies these claims, and this matter does not merit any further comment at this time. Believe all women, not men. So don't believe all victims of sexual assault. Sexual assault victims are not only women, but don't believe the men. That's the message from CNN. How very, very progressive. Dustin Heiss, the man accusing Lemon of assault, claimed that the CNN host attacked him at a Sag Harbor dive bar called Murph's in July of 2018. Heiss, who was working at the time at another Hamptons bar, alleged that one night at Murph's, and this is going to get, there's some sensitive language coming up, but I'm just quoting it. Alleged that one night at Murph's, he recognized Lemon there. Heiss offered to buy him a drink, which the CNN host declined. Later in the night, according to Heiss, Lemon approached him and his group of friends and, after putting his hands down his shorts, he vigorously rubbed his genitalia and shoved his index and middle fingers into Heiss's mustache. Per the claim, this is a quote from the lawsuit. Quote, Mr. Lemon intensely pushed his fingers against the plaintiff's face under the plaintiff's nose, forcing plaintiff's head to thrust backwards as defendant repeatedly asked plaintiff, quote, do you like pussy or dick? While saying this, Mr. Lemon continued to shove his fingers into plaintiff's face with aggression and hostility. Doesn't he sound lovely? Now, we're supposed to believe this because Mr. Heiss is a victim, and people don't make false sexual assault allegations, we're told. We're told repeatedly by the people who want anybody accused of sexual assault thrown off of college campuses and expelled from school before there's even an investigation. Due process is for suckers and liberals. They should add that parenthetical, but they don't. A source told Mediaite that Heiss demanded $1.5 million from Lemon before filing the suit, an offer the CNN host declined. The alleged attack, the suit claims, left Heiss with, quote, feelings of shame, humiliation, anxiety, anger, and guilt, and affected his work in the Hamptons. Heiss is represented by the blah, 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 speaking unspecified damages for emotional pain and loss of earnings. Well, I've seen Don Lemon. One of the things about my wife is on New Year's Eve, she watches CNN if we're at home. If we're having people over, if we're out even, we get, because it's amateur night. I don't like being out when there's a bunch of drunks on the road. But we'll go to dinner and then we'll come home. And I'm a night owl. She makes a point of staying up that night to watch CNN because she likes to watch the hosts get sloshed, get hammered. Well, after midnight, East Coast time, they switch to Don Lemon and I don't know which one of the women at CNN it is with him in there. It doesn't matter. They're usually someplace in the central time zone. Last time I remember anyway, they were in New Orleans. They get progressively drunk and drunker and more drunker and more drunker-ist until they are blotto. I'm kind of surprised that CNN lets it on their air, but it's New Year's Eve. It doesn't really matter all that much. But you watch Don Lemon there as he gets drunker, and you think, yeah, I could kind of see him doing this. I could kind of see him being a dick. Now, whether or not he was doing it to be flirty or whether or not he was doing it because he thought that this guy was being a jerk trying to buy him a drink, whatever. I could believe this. I believe the victim here. I believe Dustin Heiss. Now, that should be enough. CNN should suspend Don Lemon by their own rules, by the left's own rules. He's been accused credibly. It's one thing to say it. It's one thing for it to be floating around in the rumor mill. It's another thing entirely for it to be filed as a lawsuit where you would be subject to all sorts of charges and you could end up having to pay the legal fees of the person you sue if it's found to be bogus. So I believe Dustin Heiss here. For CNN to dismiss this out of hand by saying that he's been mean about CNN on his social media. Who the hell hasn't been mean about CNN on their social media? Have you seen CNN? It's a dumpster fire. Of course people are going to be critical of CNN. It's telling, though, that CNN thought it was necessary to dig through the guy's social media to see if they could find some dirt on him. Isn't it? That's weird. If somebody comes in and the allegation is made and it is so beyond the pale and out of the realm of possibility, there is no way on God's green earth Don Lemon would ever do anything like that. This is absurd. Tell him to go to hell. You wouldn't sick a team of lawyers and researchers to follow through on all their social media, would you? I don't think you would. That's just me. Now, these are people who, of course, again, when the president refused to go and give an interview under oath to the special counsel Robert Mueller, were constantly saying, what are you trying to hide? Guilty people don't hide things. Why won't you testify? That is absurd. What are you trying to hide, Mr. President? It's just wrong. Well, what are you trying to hide here, CNN? Why is Don Lemon not addressing this? Why is it just a one-line dismissive statement after launching what appears to be an internal investigation to find out whether or not this is true? What else are you hiding about Don Lemon, CNN? Because guilty people, if they're accused of something, don't sit back and hide behind corporate statements and allow the lawyers to handle things. These are all things we were told by CNN. So why does it not apply to them? Like I said, personally, I could see Don Lemon doing this. I think he's kind of an arrogant douchebag. He comes across that way. Certainly incredibly self-righteous. You add alcohol to that. And generally, people who are insufferable sober don't become nicer, don't become decent people when they drink. Alcohol just makes you more of what you are already, what you have bubbling under the surface. While you're sober, you can kind of keep it at bay. When you're drunk and your inhibitions are gone, look out. Everybody knows somebody where it's like you add a couple of drinks and suddenly you got instant asshole. Those are the people you should avoid, and I've managed to weed out of my life. But those people do get jobs. Those people do succeed. Who knows if Don Lemon is one of them? But I suspect we'll rarely find out. We probably won't find out. We should find out. This should launch a serious investigation and a whole bunch of depositions, and who knows where this could go. But if Don Lemon settles this, even for a mere $25,000, or it'll be some undisclosed amount, would that not be an admission of guilt again? Again, going back to the rules that they set for everybody not a Democrat. When Donald Trump paid Stormy Daniels $135,000 to just go away, that, to the left, was an admission that he'd had an affair with her. He'd obviously banged her. That's what's going on here. You don't pay people money to go away like that. Well, if you're a billionaire and somebody's going to try to embarrass you, and he apparently made these payments before, whether he slept with them or not, I don't know. I don't care. But you just, look, it's going to be more expensive to fight this. Throw some money at them that you will probably make up in the time it takes you to write the check, and it'll mean a lot to them. Stormy Daniels wasn't a member of Mensa. She wasn't raking in the money in porn. $135,000 was a nice chunk of change for her. I'd be happy to have $135,000. It'd be a nice chunk of change for me. But in general, it's just easier to pay it to make it go away than it is to deal with it. But that is an admission of guilt, according to CNN, for Donald Trump. So if there is a settlement to this case, if there is anything short of exoneration, I mean, it has to be actual, complete, and total exoneration. Again, the Mueller rule. We couldn't prove anything, but we couldn't disprove anything. We're unable to exonerate the president. We have to hold these people to their own standards. I don't think Don Lemon will like it very much, but hey, he is a key player in the game for the other side. It's our turn at bat. Be fun to watch this as it develops. Speaking of a developing mess, we have the New York Times. We'll get back to CNN. There's a Fredo update, and there is, well, you know what? Just for fun, let's do this live. This is kind of funny, and somebody will fix it, but they haven't fixed it just right yet. Hey, Siri. How old is Chris Cuomo?
Fredo Cuomo is 49 years old.
I don't know if that comes through or not, but as of right now, Siri, somebody edited, I assume, his Wikipedia page to change his name to Fredo Cuomo, because that's what happens in this world. Yes, it's childish, but it's funny because it's true. We'll get to Fredo in a second, and then we have Erin Burnett beclowning herself. Is there anybody over at CNN who isn't a complete left-wing hack and or fully ignorant of reality and law? It doesn't seem like it. But first, I want to talk about the New York Times, all the news that's fit to spin. It is a joke. The old gray lady over there, they were so successful as a news organization that they had to sell their building to a billionaire and then lease it back. And to sell it for a fortune because the real estate was worth a ton of money, the building was worth a ton of money, and then they had to lease space from them because they had nowhere else to go. Well, the Daily Beast has a story. Remember the story about how the headline, the ever-changing headline, the one that was, you know, dispassionate and honest, Trump calls for unity versus racism, that pissed off all the liberal left, and that eventually turned into such a big deal within the confines of the New York Times that they had to, well, they changed it within a few hours because of the outrage from the liberal mob on Twitter and from within the building. But victory wasn't enough for these people. They had to call an all-staff meeting to address the simmering problems lingering from the fact that somebody accidentally wrote an honest, dispassionate headline about the President of the United States. This is the story of that from the Daily Beast. New York Times executive editor Dean Baquet admitted Monday that the paper can and should do a better job covering race in the era of President Donald Trump. Don't you love that? We gotta do a better job of covering race. You're race-obsessed. Everything is racist. Everybody who says racism, 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 you write up the story, but they've got to do a better job of covering it. During a hastily arranged meeting lasting well over an hour, top Times leadership addressed the paper's staff about public criticism the outlet has faced in recent weeks centering around its coverage of Trump, race, and politics. The liberal readers of the New York Times are getting more and more pissed that instead of, you know, referring to Donald Trump as President Trump, they're just not calling him Adolf Hitler. And so they have to address this. That's basically what it is. Among the many topics discussed during the lengthy meeting were two recent embarrassments for the paper, a credulous headline that characterized Trump's post-mass shooting televised speech as a sincere call for national unity. Oh my God, how dare they? And to a lesser degree, the Twitter behavior of Times deputy editor Jonathan Weissman, who is a committed liberal, but he wasn't woke enough on two different occasions on Twitter, and he's been demoted. Also on the agenda was discussion of the when to use labels like racist in Times stories. This is where it gets interesting, and this is where usually the New York Times kind of leads the tone of news. It's AP style, the Associated Press style book that everybody adheres to. But once the New York Times starts doing something noticeably, the AP is quick to adapt it and say, we've decided this. Also on the agenda was discussed the use of labels like racist in Times stories and the paper's decision several years ago to dispense with the public editor position. That is, the independent in-house critic whose role it is to assess Times journalism on a daily basis. They don't like that. Even the publisher A.G. Sulzberger. I think his name is Pinch. Nickname is Pinch. I don't know why. I wasn't born rich. Rich people seem to give their kids nicknames. But they also, the team there that leads the paper, they say that they're worried about the challenges that the paper faces in an era of hyper-polarization and media distrust. Be honest and don't let your employees run the ship and decide how a headline or a story should be framed, and you can regain a lot of that public trust if, you know, just did your damn job the way it's supposed to be done. He also acknowledged that the paper has work to do, conceding that Times has had a couple of significant missteps. Now, this is where it gets into how liberal. Imagine being a conservative working at the New York Times. I'm not talking about one of their op-ed writers who aren't really conservative. They just happen to accidentally, drunkenly register as a Republican after drinking too many Zimas as they filled out their voter registration card. I'm talking about a legit conservative. I've never met one. I've never heard of one. But with that many people working there, there has to be one. There's a good lawsuit for a hostile workplace there. Much of the meeting focused on outrage over a headline last week following multiple mass shootings, including one in El Paso that authorities have said was seemingly motivated by racial hatred. The headline, which proclaimed Trump urges unity against racism, faced criticism both outside and within the paper among those who said the publication was papering over the president's history of racist comments and how Trump seemed to focus on other issues, including violent video games, more than racism and xenophobia. Dean Becquet, the guy who runs the day-to-day operation, said he feels sick. He feels terrible about this kerfuffle. The top editor reiterated that the headline was a mistake. Quote, "It was an effing mess," he told the staff, but joined other newsroom leaders cautioning staff not to overreact to Twitter comments about the paper's editorial decisions. See, you're dealing with a situation where the staff is going to the management and demanding changes based on the mob on social media. The mob on social media is fake. I hate to point it out, but it's fake. Most of it is fake. If you watch, here's a good thought exercise. Go through any celebrity or any political person, any political celebrity, and just look through their followers. And look at how many people, or look at people who retweet them or who immediately respond to their tweets, because there are people out there who the second somebody tweets, they're always the first or second person to respond to it. It's a little bit psycho to me, but they are out there. Look at how many followers they have. Look at how many tweets that they've sent. Those numbers are generally low. Now, you really have to be a new, like a week or two into Twitter, or horribly unengaging, awful at social media, to not garner a couple hundred followers. It's not that hard, or you just never use it. But if you're constantly responding to every Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweet with, oh my God, you're just slaying them, oh, you're the queen, you are either mentally unstable, which is entirely possible, or you are a fake bot. People can buy followers. There are stories out there, you can find them, and if you want to find a way to buy followers, you can find a way to buy followers. But people do that, and people set up programs to make their tweets seem much more wildly popular than they are. If you watch an AOC tweet, for example, you will see the likes skyrocket almost immediately. And every single one of them, no matter how innocuous the tweet is, no matter what it has to do with anything, she'll get tens of thousands of likes. You can't tell me there are tens of thousands of people out there who think, oh my God, this arcane law that she says is bad and should be repealed. That is so brilliant. I must love that. There are bots out there to make people seem more popular. This is part of the reason I think these mass shootings are happening, is everybody looks at everybody else on social media and thinks, oh my God, their life is so fabulous and mine is garbage. They're in Saint-Tropez all the time. They're doing this fabulous thing, going to this party and meeting these celebrities, and all I'm doing is sitting in my basement masturbating to, you know, printed porn. No, everybody's life, nobody's life is that exciting. They portray it as such because that's all you see. That's the point of social media, it seems, is to make everybody else feel bad about their lives. I don't personally care. I think it's ridiculous. But there are people out there who desperately want attention. They want to be famous. I'd just rather be rich, personally. So this is the mob and the bots and the Russian troll farms that are controlling the New York Times. Remember, the Russian involvement in the 2016 election was to sow discord. And they did. They absolutely did, and they absolutely still are, with very little money and very little effort, because far too many people are ready to believe anything they see on social media. But this is what's chilling about the New York Times being ruled by these people. The story continues. Baquet said he is open to further discussion on how the Times better covers issues around race, encouraging staff to visit him in his office and pointing out that the paper was focused on having more reporters from different backgrounds to cover politics and race. Yeah, because God knows we don't get enough of that already. The executive editor also said the Times standards editor was working on producing a written standard for when the paper should use the word racist, and cited clear examples of reporting where it could be used, such as when Virginia Democratic Governor Ralph Northam's college yearbook page included a photo of someone in blackface costume. Yeah, you can say that's racist, but they're not calling Ralph Northam a racist. They're not calling the guy in the picture a racist. No, 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 that would be too far. But they desperately want to call Donald Trump a racist. They desperately want Donald Trump to get labeled with that R word. And they're going to. Mark my words, by the end of the year, hell, even by the end of this month, they're going to come up with some new standards that it's just like cable news, where it's beyond discussion. Donald Trump is a racist. He says racist things. Deciding to secure our southern border to stop illegal aliens from crossing the border, that's racist. It's done out of xenophobia. If you thought journalism was stupid so far this year, it's only about to get worse. What's funny, though, is their own kind get wrapped up in this. When it's a woke off, you never know where somebody's going to freak out. Such is the case with Jonathan Weissman. He tweeted, and this is the New York Times actually did their own story on this about how this guy got demoted. How humiliating. The headline is, "A Times editor is demoted as the paper discusses its coverage of race." That's in the New York Times. This guy tweeted out something that is actually kind of true. I'll read it in their words. "Mr. Weissman joined the Times in 2012 under scrutiny for messages he posted on July 31st and August 7th. In the July 31st post, he implied that it was inaccurate to describe certain politicians from urban areas as being representative of the Midwest and the South." And you think, what? I know you're sitting there and you're going, what in the hell are you talking? How does this guy get demoted for that? Well, it's because, especially a liberal progressive in good standing. He specifically mentioned four Democrats, Representative Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, Lloyd Doggett of Texas, and John Lewis of Georgia. Three of the four are minorities. And you can't mention minority. You cannot be critical of minorities. I don't know if there's a critical tipping point if half of them had been minorities and half of them had been, you know, people you can call garbage and accuse of racism at a whim because they're white. His tweet said, quote, saying Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar are from the Midwest is like saying that Lloyd Doggett, Democrat from Austin, is from Texas, or Representative John Lewis from Atlanta is from the Deep South, Mr. Weissman wrote, and then he added, come on. Now, of course, that's objectively true. If you look at the Midwest, and I am from the Midwest, Midwesterners are not rabid radical lefties. That doesn't mean you don't develop pockets of lunatics. In the case of Rashida Tlaib, it is ethnic-based. She represents the city I grew up in. Things have changed dramatically there, but she's got a chunk of Dearborn, which is the highest concentration of Lebanese people outside of Lebanon on the face of the earth. Appealing based on ethnic background works there. It's sad, it's pathetic, it's stupid. Nobody should do it, no matter what their ethnicity is. You should vote for the person you agree with the most, not this person should represent me because they look like me. That's ignorant, stupid, and racist. But it's true. Michigan's congressional delegation is significantly more conservative. The state, House, and Senate are Republican. So she is out of touch with the rest of the state, really, in her rabid leftism. And I don't think if it were for identity politics, she'd be in there. But to say that, you know, she doesn't really represent Midwestern values, because Midwesterners don't go, the government needs to give me stuff. The government needs to take away from other people and give it to me. The government needs to make sure that they punish people of this skin tone to benefit people of my skin tone. That's not the Midwestern work ethic. So, yes, she's geographically from the Midwest, but her mentality is more Manhattan. It's more Los Angeles than it is Midwestern. That's the point I took away from Weissman's tweet. But that cost him his job. That honestly, and one other stupid tweet that he sent that was just about as offensive, meaning it wasn't offensive at all. That cost him his promotion. He's now been demoted. Usually means you're kind of being invited to leave, but you're given the soft landing program where you can go find a new job while you still work. Give you a couple of months to go find a new job, but you need to make sure you got a couple of boxes in your office at all times. This is the paper of record. If this is happening inside, this is lunatics running the asylum. The bosses are supposed to run the place. They're not supposed to have the underlings coming in and saying, look, boss, we need to talk. I don't care for the way you're doing your job. Excuse me? Get the F out of my office. Get out. You're fired. You don't have to work here. Get out. That should be the only response. And if, you know, a whole bunch of people storm out of the New York Times on principle, I will never say, I will not work here anymore. There are literally thousands of journalists across the country who would kill for an opportunity to work at the New York Times. But working at the New York Times breeds arrogance. It's like people who went to Harvard or to Yale. They seem to find a way to be able to work it into every single conversation you ever had with them. What are you having for lunch there? You got an egg salad sandwich? Yes, it reminds me of what I used to get when I was at Harvard. And sitting there silently eating my egg salad sandwich. Like, yeah, okay, I was just asking a question, dude. This is a 7-Eleven. Can you get out of line? But, yeah, this is the paper of record that sets the tone of what is news on a daily basis for not only the cable networks, all of them, even Fox, and the three broadcast network newscasts, but local news and local newspapers across the country. And this is how the sausage is made. This is how they put the news together. This is a discussion that they're having within their own shop. Should this tweet of a guy's opinion saying that people who have radically out-of-step politics with their geographical region are not really from there? And let's face it, Lloyd Doggett is from Austin. He's a liberal Democrat. He is not, you know, he's like, that's Mr. Texas. No, when you think of Texas, you recognize that Texas is a very conservative state. Same with Atlanta. Same with Georgia. John Lewis, who I believe you have to legally call him a civil rights icon. I'm not sure, but I'm taking my chances here. John Lewis represents an Atlanta suburb. But Atlanta is a red state. So his politics don't exactly mesh statewide. He's not of the Deep South, which is what Weissman was trying to actually make an insult. Yeah, they got a black guy here, but they don't really like black guys wider than congressional districts. And he got demoted for it. This is the new world. You'll never be woke enough. Even if you're on the team, you'll never be woke enough. He wrote a book about, Weissman wrote a book about Donald Trump and Jews and how he's awful and Republicans are awful about Jews. And it's still not woke enough because of two tweets. He's demoted. And this will impact things just beyond the New York Times. Be aware of it. It is an absolute dumpster fire over there. Now, before we get to a Fredo update...
I can handle things! I'm smart! Not like everybody says! Like, dumb! I'm smart, and I want respect!
Yes, you're smart, Fredo. Very, very smart. But let me tell you about something that really, really is smart, and that's Blinds.com. For many of us, our blinds, or whatever you had in your windows, you never thought about it. It's an afterthought at best. But with new made-to-order custom window coverings from Blinds.com, you can really transform the look and feel of your entire home. When they're right, everything in your home looks better. When they're wrong, your place looks like a dorm room. Ugh, don't live in a dorm room unless you're in college. And even then, live better. When I need blinds, there's only one place I go, Blinds.com. They have an amazing, amazing selection. Over 15 million windows covered and over 30,000 five-star customer reviews. Blinds.com is America's number one online retailer for affordable, quality, custom window coverings. You can't beat the deal. Whether you're looking for energy efficiency, look, heat escapes through your windows. Cold comes in through your windows and vice versa. A good set of blinds helps save you money. They essentially pay for themselves over the course of 1 year, if not before. You can't beat it. Whether you're looking for, like I said, energy efficiency or you just moved, or you want to refresh the look of your home, Blinds.com makes the whole experience so fast and easy. It's so simple. In fact, you just send them pictures of your house. They send you back custom recommendations from a professional for what will work with your color scheme, furniture, specific rooms, etc. They'll even send you samples to make sure everything looks as good in person as it does online, and every order gets free shipping. And this is the best part. If you accidentally mismeasure or pick the wrong color or screw up, even if you make the mistake, Blinds.com will remake your blinds for free. That's right. They've made it that easy. You have no excuse not to check out Blinds.com. And for a limited time, our listeners, that's you, the people with my voice in your head, you get $20 off at Blinds.com when you use the promo code CALLER. You can't beat that. That's Blinds.com, promo code CALLER for $20 off. Full wood blinds, cellular shades, roller shades, and more. Whatever they got. Blinds.com, promo code CALLER. Rules and restrictions apply, but you'll thank me for it. And they really do pay for themselves and make everything look better in your house. About the only thing they can't make look better is Fredo Cuomo. Because, my God, you can't polish a turd. Even though they're trying, the New York Daily News had a nice op-ed about how Fredo really is the N-word for Italians. The headline, Chris Cuomo was smeared with anti-Italian bigotry and was right to object. Was he right to threaten to throw the guy down the flight of stairs? Just for a quick reminder, here's a very small clip from Cuomo's weekend escapades.
Fredo is from The Godfather. He was that weak brother.
Isn't that your
And they
brother,
use though? It as an Italian aspersion. Any of you Italian?
Italian?
It's a fucking insult to your people. It's an insult to your fucking people. It's like the N-word for us.
It's like the N-word for us. It's an insult to your people. Your people. Well, I'm part WAP, and I don't take it as an insult to my people. Not at all. I look at it as an insult to stupid people. It's not the new N-word. It's the new M-word. Moron. And Chris, you're a moron. I love how he starts to say, because Fredo was the weak brother. No, Fredo was the stupid brother. There was no arm wrestling competition. Sonny would have won hands down, but I think Fredo could have taken Michael. But no, he was the stupid one. It's an insult to your intelligence, Chris. It has nothing to do with how weak you are. Weak-minded, maybe, but it's about feeble-mindedness. He can't even get his outrage right. But like I said, the New York Daily News, absolutely, this is absolutely right. It's a liberal rag, of course. They rally around the flag. CNN spent a good portion of their social media efforts saying, this is an insult, Chris Cuomo. He should be defended. Even I felt sympathy for the guy. If you listened yesterday, he's out with his family trying to enjoy a nice day, and some jackass comes up and pretends he doesn't know who he is. One person did email me. He's like, I believe that there's no way. He might not have known who he was. I think that guy, you called that guy a liar. No, I said, I suspect that guy is lying. There's a difference, legally. I suspect that he was being less than truthful. Because if you go, hey, isn't that Fredo Cuomo from CNN over there, or that news guy over there, Fredo Cuomo, before you go running over there to ask for a selfie with good old Fredo Cuomo, you Google Fredo Cuomo to find out whether or not it is, in fact, Fredo Cuomo. Because you're like, is that who it is? Because he's wearing a hat. He's not wearing a suit. People, you'd be surprised how weird it is in your brain if you just see somebody all the time one particular way, and then you see them in a different way, that you're like, who is that? I know that person from somewhere. I've seen famous people where I'm like, who the hell is that? I know them from somewhere. And then it hits you and you're like, oh my God, this nerdy. And it probably won't mean anything to anybody. But I was walking down the streets of New York last year when my book came out, and I saw Jim Jarmusch, who's a film director, indie film director, walking the other way. And I'm walking up to him or walking towards him. And I'm like, I know that guy from somewhere. I know that guy from somewhere. And after I'd passed him, it hit me. He was just, you know, wearing T-shirt and like jeans or whatever. And I've only ever seen him kind of dressed up. That's the way it works. I would recognize a lot of people. But if Paul McCartney were here's a better example. Forget Jim Jarmusch, because you probably don't know who that is. Although his movies are great. Paul McCartney, you hear stories all the time. Less now, but I'm sure it still happens occasionally. The guy lives in New York, so he walk around New York a lot. He lives in New York part of the time. Paul McCartney would sometimes grab his guitar, his acoustic guitar, and go into subway stations and play. He'd open up his guitar case and play. He'd be wearing a baseball hat and like a jean jacket or something you wouldn't expect Paul McCartney. First of all, context is everything. You never expect to see Paul McCartney in a subway station playing guitar. But he's done it. And people didn't mob him. They didn't attack him. Oh my God, it's Paul McCartney. I can't believe it. I probably would. But he got away with it because out of context, it doesn't make any sense in our brains for Paul McCartney to be playing guitar in a subway station with asking for change. That's just the way it is. That's the way our brain works. So if you see somebody and you think, is that who I think it is? You'd look them up on your phone before you go over there and start filming the encounter. I would think. That's my opinion, and my opinion is the right opinion to have, and I recommend that you all adopt it. So I have sympathy for Fredo to that extent, but he went too far. He went over the deep end and caused a scene when he could have just said, look, you got me, jackass. There you go. Congratulations. Put that on your resume. You called me Fredo. Now move along with your life. And if they didn't, you call over management or whatever, wherever you are, and get the guy thrown out. Done and done. You don't stand up and say, I'll throw you down the effing stairs, and I'll do this, and I'll effing ruin you. I'll end you. I'll do this, that, and the other thing. Because then you become the story. And you give the people exactly what they wanted in the first place, which is why they did it. They wanted to get under your skin, and congratulations, they're under your skin. But it turns out that since this video went out online, there have been all sorts of clips recovered for MSNBC. Chris Matthews calls everybody Fredo. Chris Matthews, who is Charlie Brown's illegitimate son. I'm only basing that on looks. Oh, by the way, on Friday, they're already tweeting this out. On Friday's edition of Hardball at 7 p.m. on MSNBC, they've got Anthony Scaramucci and Omarosa they should be embarrassed of themselves, but they're actually plugging it. Because there is a small niche of morons out there who go, well, I've got to find out what a guy who worked in the White House for 11 days has to say. And Omarosa, who didn't really have much of a job title, well, the world needs to know what's going on in her gray matter, doesn't it? No. But MSNBC, they're not in the news business anymore. Anyway, back to Chris Cuomo. For fun, the Washington Free Beacon, they do the Lord's work over there. They put together a montage of some of the times that Fredo was used just on CNN. Just on CNN. Now, Chris Cuomo, does he have no ethics, no morals? Is he not outraged? Should he not have marched down to management's office and said, look, you guys need to stop using the Italian N-word all the time on the network? It is an outrage, and I am disgusted by this, and I can't believe I will sue. You're insulting me based on my race or ethnicity or whatever the hell he's trying to claim. No, he didn't do that. And one of the times, the last time that you're going to hear here, which is the time I played yesterday, actually happened on Chris Cuomo's show while Chris Cuomo was there. But just for fun, here is like 40 seconds worth of exclusive CNN clips calling or using the term Fredo, which Chris Cuomo says is the Italian N-word.
I mean, he kind of makes Don Jr. out to be Fredo in Godfather 2.
Was Michael Flynn Don Corleone or Fredo?
Mafia family run by Michael Corleone or one run by his weakling brother Fredo?
Look, Devin Nunes is proving himself again and again to be the Fredo of the Republican Party.
Cruelly compare Donald Trump Jr. to Fredo Corleone. Privately refers to President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, as Fredo.
Right, because Bannon's...
You broke my heart, Fredo.
Daddy kept Fredo back home, so who cares?
It's like the N-word for us.
You come to me on the day of my idiot son's wedding, and you ask me to give him ratings on CNN? This I cannot do.
Oh, poor Fredo. It happened right in front of him. They're dropping the... Chris Cuomo is comfortable with a whole bunch of his colleagues just dropping N-bombs all over the place? Is that what you're trying to tell us, Chris? Of course, Chris used the word himself back in 2010 in a radio interview.
Boy, see, I've dubbed it La Cuomo Nostra. That there is a group of people, of politicos, who always hint that they might run but don't necessarily plunge all the way, and they are members of La Cuomo Nostra.
So who am I then, Fredo?
Yes, exactly. So you better be careful that your brother Andrew doesn't kiss you on both cheeks and then all of a sudden they take you out into the middle of the lake and then, where's Chris?
He kisses me plenty, but because he's a great big brother.
So there's Fredo calling himself Fredo and laughing about it. Yet he flew off the handle. Maybe, just maybe, he was lying in that video. I think nobody comes out of that video looking good. I still believe nobody comes out of that video looking good. But Chris continues to look worse and worse and worse. And, of course, that's to be expected when you're that dumb, isn't it now? All right, speaking of dumb, again over at CNN, Aaron Burnett had on Ken Cuccinelli talking about the Emma Lazarus poem. I can't believe in 2019 we're talking about the freaking Emma Lazarus poem, on the base of the Statue of Liberty. It was used in fundraising to help raise money for the base of the Statue of Liberty. That's it. It is not legally binding. It shouldn't have to be said that it's legally binding. But liberals all across the media landscape are going, well, I guess the words on the Statue of Liberty are going to be meaningless now. Because the Trump administration wants to make sure that that aliens who come into the country, that immigrants who are coming in legally or people who are applying for permanent status, that they're able to take care of themselves. The horror. Can you imagine? Can you imagine anything? Probably did this in Nazi Germany. Made sure that, you know, every sane country does this. We don't let in people who are destitute, who have no skills and no language skills and are sickly. Of course, if Democrats win, they want to open up our healthcare system to all the illegals in the world, so it will change if a Democrat wins. But no sane country would. Democrats want to do it. Listen to this exchange and Aaron Burnett's indignation.
She goes, well, my family wouldn't have been able to come into the country.
And Ken Cuccinelli tries to speak rationally. At the beginning, she keeps wanting to re-quote him. You rewrote the poem. And he's like, no, he just stated a simple fact of law, which has been law for more than 100 years. Aaron Burnett would have none of it. She had her script. She had her narrative. She was unable to think on her feet and adapt and just ask a question. She wanted to hammer this point home. Why? Because she's taking it personally, because I wouldn't be in this country. I went on to become a CNN anchor, she says. Like, yeah, that's not really contributing to society. So if we could have thrown your great-grandparents out at Ellis Island, we'd probably be just that much better off in the world. But that's neither here nor there. Listen to Aaron Burnett think she's committing journalism, but notice how directly and deliberately obtuse she is in every conceivable way.
You say this is about self-sufficiency, and you say that proudly. You heard me play you this morning when you quoted the Emma Lazarus poem on the Statue of Liberty.
Oh, I wasn't quoting it. I was answering a question.
Right. Okay. I'm sorry. But you were giving your version of what you thought the poem should say, right?
No. No, I was not.
You said, give me your tired and your poor who can stand on...
I'm not rewriting poetry.
Okay, well, what you said is, give me your tired and your poor who can stand on their own 2 feet and who will not become a public charge. I just played you saying it.
Right, I listened.
Okay, okay, so I'm just making sure you're not disputing what you said. Okay, so obviously the actual poem is quite different. I'm going to read it.
Right. I was answering a question. I wasn't writing poetry, Aaron. Don't change the facts.
I'm not changing the facts.
You're twisting this like everybody else on the left has done all day today.
No, 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 because I think it's important. You're saying that it's very important to be able to stand on your own 2 feet. A
lot
of people may support you and respect your saying that. But the poem doesn't say that, right? The poem that's on the Statue of Liberty.
I didn't bring up the poem. Well, an NPR reporter did, and now you have. Okay, I didn't bring it up. I'll answer your substantive intelligence
questions.
So
I'm going to give
you
a substantive intelligence. Okay. However it came up, you said, give me your tired and your poor, okay, who can stand on their own 2 feet and who will not become a public charge. That's what you said. I just played it. The poem reads, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of the teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Wretched, poor refuse, right? That's what the poem says America's supposed to stand for. So what do you think America stands for?
Well, of course, that poem was referring back to people coming from Europe where they had class-based societies where people were considered wretched if they weren't in the right class. And it was introduced, it was written 1 year, 1 year after the first federal public charge rule was written that says, and I'll quote it, any person unable to take care of himself without becoming a public charge, unquote, would be inadmissible. Or in the terms that my agency deals with, they can't do what's called adjusting status, getting a green card, becoming legal permanent residents. Same exact time, Aaron, same exact time. In the year it went on the Statue of Liberty, 1903, another federal law was passed expanding the elements of public charge by Congress. This is a
My family came here as crofters from Scotland, right? They had no education. They had nothing.
Right.
But I am here because they were allowed in, and I'm an anchor on CNN. Right?
Right.
So I'm just saying I wouldn't be here.
My Italian grandfather sponsored his two cousins to come here. This is a tradition that many of our families, yours and mine, can point to.
Right.
This is not an exclusionary
No, but what I'm saying is I would have been excluded. I don't know about you, but I would have been.
Well, no, that's not. You're deciding on one point. And our ISOs are going to take what's called a totality of the circumstances test, which has long been the test for public charge. And this will be one factor. It will be a heavily negative factor. But they can have positive factors that offset that as well, just as has happened throughout American history.
Okay.
And I should note also, this doesn't apply to any of the humanitarian categories. Not to asylum, refugees, domestic violence, trafficking victims. None of them are covered by the public charge rule.
Everything Ken Cuccinelli said at the end there just blew a hole in her, my compassion argument. But it, well, my family wouldn't have been in there. My family might not have made it in there. We'd probably be better off. Quite frankly, Aaron Burnett, if you have an understanding of what a poem is and you think that it equates to federal law or even a federal guiding principle, you're too dumb. You should, your family should not have been allowed in the country. And I mean that in the nicest possible way, which is not at all. This is the modern left. This is CNN. I mean, it was a hell of a week for CNN. You get Don Lemon playing grab ass. You got Fredo being super Fredo, and everybody's throwing around the N-word over there on CNN. And you've got Aaron Burnett questioning about whether or not we should change the words of the poem, which are meaningless to begin with. And I love this is how people view the United States. I really don't think that people around the world know about the Emma Lazarus poem. Judging by how few Americans actually have read the whole thing, they always quote just a very small part of it. I don't think the rest of the world is spending time learning the Emma Lazarus poem. Call me crazy. I'm just not buying it. Anyway, I didn't have time to get into the Hong Kong thing, but things in Hong Kong are getting bad. I would like the president to weigh in more forcefully and put China on notice. But realistically, this is an issue. This is really the fault of Great Britain. They just pulled out of Hong Kong in, I think it was 1999. They just said, okay, we'll in a show of good faith, we'll give Hong Kong back to China. Why? Why would you show good faith to China? Why would you give up Hong Kong and condemn all of those people to communism? Where's Great Britain on this one? They have a lot more responsibility than we do, but we should be standing up. You can't bitch about how Barack Obama ignored what was going on during the Arab Spring in Iran, which he did, which was horrible and a disgrace, not saying anything until it was well too late and people had already been shot and killed in the streets. But you can't do that and then sit idly by because you want to have good trade deals with them. This is something that could hopefully maybe spread throughout China. Maybe people in Beijing who haven't been arrested already will take the lead from Hong Kong and step up and start something. I don't know, but with the right encouragement, you never know. But we should definitely be warning against the wholesale slaughter of people, I think. Anyway, that is all the time we have. Thank you to our two sponsors today, Blinds.com and, of course, GetTheTea.com. Good stuff, both of them, and we are grateful for it. We'll be back with another exciting episode. Tomorrow I'm going to interview Roger Simon, the founder, one of the godfathers in the movement of conservative media, the founder of PJ Media. He's got a new novel coming out that we'll use on the show in a couple of weeks. It's just the only window to talk to him is tomorrow. So don't forget to enter to get a signed copy of Liz Wheeler's book. You've got until Thursday at 10 a.m. to send me those emails. Otherwise, thanks for sharing. Thanks for spreading the word. Keep doing all of that. I will see you tomorrow. Have a great Wednesday. Hey, Siri, how old is Chris Cuomo?
Fredo Cuomo is 49 years old.
You gotta love technology.